Now, I've been joined in studio by two people who are very involved with Scouting Ireland at the coalface, so to speak. We'll have to cut out coalfaces because of the climate change. But anyway, Sean Vahey is volunteer leader at his scout group, and 20-year-old Maeve Richardson has been a member of the scouts since she was six. Now, you're both welcome. Sean, you're a leader now. How did you get involved in scouts in the first place?
I've been like Maeve, I've been a scout since I was 6 years old. I've been involved literally all my life, up through Beavers and then Cubs, Scouts, Ventures, Rovers. And I went to work for the Scouts for a little bit in Switzerland as well.
In Switzerland?
Yeah. Working for the World Scout Organization. And now I'm just back and I'm working just on a ground level, just with my local group, working with scouts, age kind of 12 to 15.
You're not speaking on behalf of scouting, you're speaking on behalf of yourself, really.
Yeah.
Give us an idea of the various things you've done down through the years.
Like, kind of growing up as a kid, like I said, you were always part of a patrol or something in your group. I remember being 12, 13 when I was appointed as a patrol leader, meaning kind of, you know, I was this 13-year-old who had six or seven kids who I was kind of looking after with the supervision of adults and with kind of the care and stuff of adults.
And what were you to do for them?
It's the kind of thing that when you went on a camp that you were the one who said, okay, we need to get up at this time, we'll make a rota so that these three people will do breakfast and then these next three people will do dinner, things like that. It's just that you're as a person in charge, kind of coordinating a little bit. And it's something that you do as a kid that you never at all would have done as a kid, that you probably wouldn't start doing until you reach kind of university or professional age.
Yeah. Tell me about you, Maeve. When did you join?
So I joined when I was six. My brother had been in the Cubs ahead of me, so I got his old uniform and I was delighted to go along at the age of six. And I have autism spectrum disorder, so as
you,
a kid...
You've which?
Autism spectrum disorder.
Right.
So I kind of limited opportunities because I wasn't very coordinated as a child, so sport wasn't really something I could do and I lacked the social skills to really be involved in sport. So scouting kind of gave me an avenue to develop my social skills, and I felt always supported by the other kids that were there with me and the leaders that were there. They kind of gave me the time to develop and get into being a leader.
Were they conscious of the autism, or did you share that with them?
So I wasn't actually diagnosed till a year after I joined Scouts.
Yeah.
But they could always tell I was a little bit different, but the other kids didn't mind. They were still just as friendly to me. And
isn't that terrific?
Yeah,
because you often hear of people being bullied or left out or cold-shouldered, that kind of thing. Didn't happen.
That culture wasn't there for me in scouting, you know.
So what did you do in scouting? You know, what when you look back, you're 20 now, what stands out for you?
So what stood out for me was the opportunities that I got. Some of my first times going to mainland Europe with scouts. I've been to Germany and I've been to France with scouts. And scouting has gotten me involved in other things. Like, scouts doesn't just produce scouts. Scouts produces active citizens. It produces conscious people. So as a result of scouts, I got involved in Cordon Nog, which is kind of the youth branch of county councils. I got involved in the Irish Second Level Students Union through scouts, as I was asked to represent them. And it's made me the active citizen I am today. But I think some of the smaller things that stood out was just, you know, being at a campfire with my mates, having a good time, roasting marshmallows, hoping someone didn't burn their eyebrows off, having a good time.
I thought that only happened in English kids' books, you know, like Enid Blyton stuff. What stands out for you, Sean?
There's lots of really great experiences. I think one experience that stands out to me, and if I'm correct in saying, I think Maeve has done this as well, but it's a challenge called the Explorer Belt. It's something that is only accomplishable because of the amount of work that gets put in by adults and kind of the care that gets put into it. But it's an activity for young adults. I think at the time when I did it, it was 18 to 21-year-olds, but now I think it's 18 to 25, am I correct in saying?
Yeah.
And the idea of it is that each year there's about 20 teams, a team of two people each, and you go off and you're basically dropped in the middle of a foreign country. Before you go, you know that you're going to Germany, you're going to France. For my case, it was Sweden and Denmark.
Yeah.
But you fly into the country and then you get trains in all different directions. And then leaders basically drop you off in the middle of somewhere in the countryside. So I was 18 at the time. We were dropped at the bottom of southern Denmark, the bottom of southern Sweden. We had to make our way across to the west of Denmark. We had 10 days, 200 kilometres to walk. We had €100 between the two of us as well, because that was part of the challenge. And obviously all that time we were being supervised by adults. There was adults in sweep teams that were, you know, driving around. We always had phones on us that had to be on and active, that we were constantly calling and checking in. It was a very controlled and safe environment, but at the same time, an incredible, wild experience that, again, I never would have gotten the opportunity to do without Skins.
What did you spend your €100 on?
Food, ice cream?
Very limited food, yeah. Rations and rations of food. Yeah.
And accommodation?
No, actually, in those situations, we would have our tent on our back and we would basically knock into farmers' homes and ask, can we please put up a tent somewhere down your field? And most of the time, those people said yes. And sometimes they were really nice and maybe offered a shower or a dinner or something like that. Yeah. But again, every time you checked in somewhere, you were sending your location and check-in details to the team that were in charge.
Right. And what kind of assistance were you given to get from southern Sweden to western Denmark? I mean, did they give you the relevant maps and all that? Stop.
Yeah, we obviously had the relevant like maps and compasses and things, and that's obviously something that growing up with scouts, we know how to use, we know how to navigate with that kind of equipment. But also in preparation for the week, there's some training weekends, there's just kind of general training sessions for it. So while it would be kind of expected that a scout of that level would know how to use like map and compass, that kind of thing, it's absolutely 100% made sure that they do before they go on a challenge like that.
Right.
We were also, you know, allowed to ask locals and stuff for, you know, directions. I never actually did the Explorer Belt. I did the youth version in Ireland, so I was dropped into the wilds of Ballydehob in West Cork.
Not a bad spot.
But locals kind of told us, oh, this is the best route, you know, there's footpath on this road and things like that. But it was amazing to see how helpful people were, you know, getting offered a shower, getting offered direction. I did another version from Cork to Tipperary as well. And there was this lady who drove past us in Mitchellstown and then she drove past us again in the village of Golden. And she's like, this is my second time seeing you guys. I want to buy you coffee. And we sat down, we had coffee and ice cream with her because she just saw us trekking around.
Right. And how did she know what you were doing? Oh, you're in your uniforms.
Well, she saw our neckerchiefs, so right, she was able to recognise us and she'd seen the same group of three of us walking around. So
right.
Kind of
so, as all of this was unfolding during the week, how did you react to the story?
It was a really sad thing to see from just purely, you know, a scout leader who has 20 kids in my scout group and kind of immediately recognizing when those things are said to the doll that this is going to have real ramifications for us straight away. Even if it is just recommendations to, you know, saying that you recommend that we don't do overnights, it's such a drastic and really altering and potentially dangerous thing to the Scouts as an organisation, because I think one thing
is that
really,
the essence, is that the most important bit?
Yeah, like an essential part of Scouts is something called plan, do, review. So before we go on a camp, we plan everything. We go on the camp, we do. And then when we come back from it, we review everything. We you know, do evaluations, so we know that when we go and do this again, that it's done better the next time. But if there's no weekends, there's no do. There's nothing to do around it. We're all like, even if we meet up on a Wednesday night, Wednesday night is my Scouts.
Right. Yeah.
But if we meet up, say that once a week for 2 hours, we are playing some games. We're doing some training and things like that. But all that kind of little training and stuff is always built towards these activities that you can't do in 2 hours in a hall on any weekday night.
Right.
It's also that sense of independence that young people get from going away from a camp, because, you know, you might go away for a week and that's the longest you'll be away from your parents. And you're doing absolutely everything for yourself. You're cleaning yourself, you're cooking for yourself, you're setting up where you're going to sleep yourself.
Right.
And that's just such a core part of scouting, is that learning independence, learning to survive yourself and working as a team.
You know, having access to, if you get somebody with perversion who wants to get at children. You could in some ways say, well, Scouts is an ideal place, like swimming was an ideal place. How do you react to that?
I think that these awful people that did these things, they not only preyed on children, but they preyed on the Scouts. They could see that for everything that you've said, for what we do, we go away on weekends, stuff. Everybody could see how the Scouts could be an easy opportunity to try to go after an organisation, something like that.
And
I think that the really important thing is that most of these allegations we're talking about, we're talking, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s, so before not only Scouting Ireland, but the whole of Ireland, most of the world knew anything about what even child protection meant. But nowadays, we have such strict child protection measures in place. Any leader that gets involved with Scouts has to be Garda vetted, so they have to have their whole backgrounds checked. They have to undergo child protection course before they can even interact and be left alone with kids like
right.
that.
And have both of you been Garda vetted?
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm not actually a Scout leader. I've remained a youth member, so I don't interact with young people. I'm only in my college branch. But regardless of that, I am Garda vetted. Just in
really?
Case it does happen that I happen to interact with a younger Scout, and just so we have that protection there. But if you are going to become a leader interacting with young people, you have to go through at least 24 hours of training. Child protection training, Scout leadership training, before you're even allowed to interact with child.
Right.
Just to say, I think it's fantastic the work you do, and the fact that it's you volunteer to do this work, and I have no doubt there's a tremendous good. However, you mentioned that the allegations were relating to past situations, but actually what the minister referred to were live situations, that they that was the real concern, that the live situations were not being dealt with according to the policies and procedures that TUSLA would stand over.
Right. One of the stories we heard was that a woman was raped, or said she was raped, and that if somebody comes to you and says they were raped, you don't talk to them. Now, that came as a big surprise to me. The only people that can talk to them are the Gardaí or TUSLA. Is that part of your training?
I am definitely here to speak on a ground level, talking about
but
I don't want to get too much into what all of Scouting Ireland is, but there are definitely measures in place that if a child comes with an allegation, something like that, we say, myself as a leader, I would approach our group leader, which is just the person in charge of all of the Cubs Beaver Scouts in our little region. We have about 100 Scouts in our region. And that then we would call Gardaí straight away.
Right.
And that there would be at least a level of responsibility and somebody within my group who is higher than me who would also know about it. But obviously,
right.
once you're talking anything with child protection, Gardaí have to be involved. There's nothing about calling 10 other people in the organisation and asking what to do.
Right.
It's absolutely responsibility. Gardaí get involved straight away.
Larry, you want to come in?
I just wanted to say what a wonderful advertisement for Scouting the two of you are. I mean, it's just extraordinary. You make me feel quite useless and inept, to be quite, to be quite frank with you. But I think your testimonies, I think, are really powerful, and I think that it comes up in a piece Brendan O'Connor has written in the Sunday Independent today, that I think it's really, really important that the policies and procedures are implemented, that it's rooted out, any of this stuff is rooted out, and that more and more young people can continue to have the wonderful experiences that you've had.
You remind me, we have a daughter now, early 40s, called Mandy, who has Down syndrome, and she's a very willful, confident, assertive, sociable, outgoing person. And a significant part of the reason is because when she was in her early teens, she was accepted into the Guides, not the Scouts at the time, and she became a Guide. It was the first organisation where Mandy was accepted in a non-formal setting as a full and equal participant, respected as an equal in that setting. And the contribution it made to her development and her confidence in her life and so on was profound. It's one of the reasons why Scouting and Guiding, I think, are such important, fundamentally important things. It is a reality, though, that in any organisation that works with children, it is absolutely fundamental that everyone involved has to be seen to be safe with around children.
Yeah.
And vetting is only part of it. Vetting is, in many ways, is only a first step. Management, recruitment, supervision, all of those things, and, you know, Ellen will know an awful lot about this, are absolutely fundamental. Scouting didn't always do it well, didn't always do it right. All the signs are that they're 10 times, 20 times, 50 times better than they used to be. And I don't think anyone would ever claim, if you're involved in an organisation that works with young people, that we've got it, we've cracked it, and that there'll never
vigilance,
be a moment's
vigilance,
danger.
Vigilance, I presume.
You can't ever let your guard down.
Right.
If I may say one
Yes, certainly.
To touch on your experience with your child with Down syndrome, getting something out of not scouting but guiding, which are very closely linked organisations. Yeah. Like, we have those stories 10 times apiece, every single one of us. Yeah. There's always been kids with autism or Asperger's or people who had difficulties in other sports clubs, social clubs, they come to scouts because we have a little bit more time. We can take a bit of time to make sure that, you know, we can organise things around them.
They're all equal in scouts. There can
and
be
physical
other
disabilities also, like, not to name names, and I don't want to for people's privacy and things, but we had a kid in our group who had literally been in a wheelchair all of his life, and we organised so much around him to make sure that he involved it. We fundraised as a group to make sure he had an all-terrain wheelchair so he could come on camps and things like that with us. We made sure that when the leaders were meeting up to plan meetings, that every single question was asked, okay, how do we get this person involved?
Right, yeah.
And
that's terrific. Mm. That really is. Yes, Irene?
There's just two things, Marion, that struck me. The first is Maeve made a very I thought impactful statement there, saying that the scouts don't just create scouts. Mm. They create these individuals that are armed with an entire skill set in terms of their confidence, in terms of their opportunities, in terms of their development. And Sean himself said that at the age of 13, I think it was, that he was put into this quasi-leadership role under the supervision of adults, of course, but where he had to step up and take responsibility. I think that's an incredible thing for any organisation to encourage, and it certainly seems to be a trend that continues as they grow up into adulthood. The other thing, Marion, that I just picked up on was, you had asked, was Scouting Ireland maybe an easy target for people who have kind of perverse tendencies? And Fergus or Ellen may be able to speak to this better, but the one thing that we have seen in terms of Ireland's history with abuse is that it's not confined to any one place, any one organisation, and indeed childcare cases that I would deal with in the courts. So much of this goes on in family homes.
Yes.
It goes on with neighbours. It goes on with relatives. So it's not an organisational issue. I do think the safeguards need to be in place for those large organisations. Don't get me wrong.
It's much more prevalent, though, in places where impunity exists.
Of course.
Where you can get away with it, where a blind eye is turned. So that's why, you know, we've had so many problems with the church, et cetera, et cetera. Impunity is the bottom line. And that was a problem with Scouting Ireland. It's not the case now.
And it was a problem of it with institutions where children, and that those were the terrible stories that we heard as a consequence of the Ryan report, which highlighted all of that.
I think as a society, we're moving more towards a much more zero tolerance approach now, which is incredible. Yeah, it's great.
I think ever since the late 90s when it kind of became public that so much of this has been happening in so many youth organisations and institutions, religious institutions, that we've really seen a change from being reactive to child protection to being proactive.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's such an integral part of Scouting Ireland now and most youth organisations. This whole conversation about child protection has only really started in the last few decades. It hasn't always been there.
That's true. Oh, And kids were given much more freedom, and people give out about it. They say kids have no freedom, but you've got to get a balancing act going here. In terms of volunteering, and then we leave it, would this put people off volunteering? Because volunteering is a big part of our society.
No, I really hope not. And what I would say, I really hope if there's anybody listening at home who hopefully maybe some of our stories resonated with you, that you were previously a scout at one time in your life and you have fond memories of it and you're maybe reading these things in the news and there is a little bit of a danger to Scouting Ireland as an organisation at the moment, that I'd ask you if you've ever considered, oh, maybe one day I'd go back to scouts, maybe one day I'd go back to be a leader, that maybe now do it, because we do need, we're going to need the support and the help more so than anything, right. more than any other time before.
Okay, and just last word to a parent. As a parent of scouts, I went on camp as the cook for younger children. I can only say that I've witnessed the most amazing, dedicated scout leaders. So let's hope all this gets resolved and the good stuff can continue. Thank you very much indeed for coming in, and we'll take a break.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.